This week on Reentry Stories.
You know, there was a time when I thought I'm never going to go home. I'm doing 30 to 90 years. I'm never going to go home.
I'm Mary Evans. In this season of Reentry Stories, we explore injustices within the criminal justice system and hear from exonerees who are reclaiming their lives. Support for Reentry Stories comes from the Montgomery County Office of Reentry and the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO. Nancy Smith is a former Head Start bus driver from Lorain, Ohio, who was arrested and charged with sexually abusing children in her care. She served more than 15 years in prison for crimes that never took place.
My name is Nancy Smith. I am from Lorain, Ohio. Let me see. I am a mother of four children. I am a grandmother of nine and great grandmother of two, getting ready to have a third one. I am an exoneree. I was falsely incarcerated back in 1994. 28 years later, second time for my exoneration. I had one in 2009 and it was taken away, and then I had another one in February of 24, and that was my final exoneration.
What kind of perception of the police and the judicial system did you have growing up as a, you know, a white woman in Lorain? I know I've talked to a lot of people and they've said that they were like, you know, they grew up thinking that the law was someone that they could trust and the judicial system was fair. So what is your take on what was your perspective of the judicial system and the police growing up?
Well, absolutely. I agree with them. You know, you're raised to know that the police are there to protect you. And I was raised that, you know, I was to trust the police and that they were, you know, to protect me. I thought we had a fair justice system until this nightmare happened to me. And then I realized that, you know what, we don't have a fair justice system. And the sad thing is that my children, you know, grew up through all this nightmare also. And so they don't have any trust in the justice system to this day. And I really don't know if I can ever trust them again. They have for 30 years have put me through a nightmare. And, you know, I mean, I only did 15 in prison, but, you know, these last 15, they really put me through some things. And so it's hard to trust the justice system. And I probably never will. And that's really sad because, like I said, you know, we're raised to trust them and to know that they are there and that they're going to do the right thing and that they're going to, you know, protect their citizens. And even the police department failed me in so many ways. And it's really hard to even trust them.
All right. So do you want to talk a little bit about, you don't have to go into too many details because I don't want to reopen any trauma or revisit any trauma for you. But if you could just give us a brief synopsis or a brief breakdown of the crime that you were charged for and what did that entail?
So I was a bus driver for the Head Start program in Lorain. Going into my fourth year, I had a mother make an allegation against me saying that I took her daughter to a birthday party where, I molested this child with my boyfriend, which was definitely, it was like, are you kidding me? This is, what are you talking about? You know, the next thing I know, she went to other parents and said that this happened to her daughter and that they needed to take their children to the hospital to be checked, blah, 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 blah. And so what happened was, is all the, they went to the hospital and they were like, there's no signs of abuse on these children. You know, I was interviewed by a police detective. I did a polygraph test. I passed it with no problem because nothing ever occurred anyway. But this mother was not going to stop. She went to the mayor. She went to the TV station. She went to the newspapers and turned this into a big hysteria. Unfortunately, at that time, we had a prosecutor and he was going to get, he was going to win this no matter what. He was going to take this to trial and he was going to win this no matter what, knowing that nothing ever happened, knowing that I did not even know Joseph Allen. This was the man that they accused me of doing this with. Never met Joseph Allen, didn't know anything about this man. And I was tried and convicted in August of 94. I did almost 15 years before a judge brought me back for resentencing. He then reviewed the whole case. He took a couple weeks in his chambers, sat down by himself and reviewed the whole case, came back in June of 2009 and acquitted both of us of all charges. And the next thing I know, the new set of prosecutors that had come in decided that even though I did enough time, they felt like they wanted me to, they didn't want to send me back to prison. What they wanted to do is have me go back in front of a parole board, which I did in 2007, and when I was still incarcerated. And then, so I think it was, 2012 when I went in front of the parole board. They weren't given an answer fast enough. So then they decided, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to have you sign this agreement. Either you sign this agreement or you go back to prison, Ms. Smith. We're going to give you 12. So all my charges were dropped against me. So then they created charges. So they created 6 counts of gross sexual imposition, gave me 2 years for each count, said, okay, well, that would be considered time served. 12 years, you did 14 and a half, 15. That'll be considered time served. And then we'll go ahead and have you sign this agreement. And then, so you can either sign this agreement or you can go back to prison. But either way, if you don't sign the agreement, you're going back to prison today.
And what was the agreement? What was the agreement?
The agreement was that I could never sue the state, that I could never take it to court. I could never ask for a new trial. You know, I could never take it on the federal level. Basically tying my hands to say, you cannot do anything. You have no right to do anything, Ms. Smith. The only thing we're going to do is you're going to sign this. And in the agreement, I said, I will maintain my innocence and I will not register as a sex offender because I'm not a sex offender. And they agreed to that. They agreed that I was able to maintain my innocence throughout the hearing. Even though I signed this agreement, I said I didn't do this. And, you know, Mary, I knew it was against my better judgment. I knew it. I was like, I know I can't. I'm not in my heart. I knew that I wasn't doing the right thing. But I had already been home 5 years. I've already reestablished my relationship with my children. I was a grandmother for 8 years, you know. All my grandkids were born when I was in prison. I didn't talk to my family about this. I didn't tell my kids about this. I didn't tell anybody about this because I felt like, this is a decision that I had to make. And my attorneys were like, Nancy, we're going to, you know, this is up to you. You can go back to prison. We don't know how long it'll be before we can get you back out, if we can even get you back out. But, you know, this is a decision that you have to make. Read this agreement and then you decide. And I said, I want to be able to maintain my innocence throughout this hearing. I am not pleading guilty to this because I'm not guilty. And so I signed the agreement the day of the hearing. I signed the agreement. And, you know, I honestly, Mary, I just knew in my heart that I wasn't doing the right thing. But it was like, how do I leave my kids again? And all my grandchildren. And I was like, I can't do that to them. My kids had been through hell and back because of these people. And I was not willing to put them through that again. So I signed the agreement.
Ooh, that's heavy.
We'll take
a little breather. So I know that's traumatic. Man.
It was a sad situation that they felt like this was okay to put me through this. I mean, like they would call me up to their office after hours because they didn't want nobody to know that they were talking to me and that they were trying to make this deal with me. You know, it was just like, okay, and these are prosecutors that I should trust. They knew that I didn't do this, but yet they were upholding whatever for some reason, they just, nobody wanted to take accountability for this. You know, Judge Burge finally stood up and said, listen, these people are not guilty, you know, and I'm going to acquit them. And then, you know, and then you have this prosecutor's office that was like, nope, she's going back to prison. They're going back to prison unless they sign this deal. You know, you made me sign it under duress. You gave me no choice because that day you were sending me back to prison. And I just knew that I couldn't do another 15 or 20 or whatever years might have been put on my shoulders, you know. And it's just sad that a justice system can fail people in so many ways, especially in a person who's innocent. They don't care. It's their saying is, it's not about justice, it's about winning. So It's about winning for them and no justice for the innocent. Yeah.
Okay, so you went to prison, and I've been incarcerated, and I know how hard it is for people who enter into the carceral system with those kinds of allegations. So I can only imagine what those 15 years were like for you at a higher reformatory for women. It's kind of like you have a scarlet letter when you go in with those kinds of allegations. They have you carry around a red folder to go to these classes, so you kind of already know who's in these classes for sexual assault or, you know, sexual gross imposition charges and things like that against children. And so I know that that was probably very traumatic for you, going from a citizen who had never, you know, a citizen of service, being a bus driver for a Head Start program, which is a federally funded program, to now being a state incarcerated individual, probably getting harassed beyond measures, treated unequivocally, horribly, inside those walls. And so I'm just grateful that you were able to survive that and go back. And I could understand completely why you hurried up and signed the agreement, because who wants to go back to that? You know, who wants to go back to a place where, you know, your life is in danger? You have some women who will never leave. So do you think that they would mind to take your life? Like, people don't understand all the different things that come with incarceration. They see these shows like Orange is the New Black, or, you know, all these other shows that are that kind of like sexualize and glorify the carceral system. And it is nothing like that at all. So
one thing I can say is that I never, going into prison, I did not know what I was going into. And of course, I feared for myself, you know. I was always raised my dad always raised, he had six girls and one boy. And he always raised us to take care of ourselves, never to let anybody bully us, push us around or anything like that. I was raised from a strong father who gave us, you know, what do I want to say, like strength and courage to face whatever may come our way, you know? And so I, you know, I've always been a little bit of a tough person, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go in here and I don't know what I'm going into, but I know that not one person is going to touch me. Not one person is going to say anything to me, and I'm going to hold my own, and I don't care. I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to clear my name and get out of this place. And it wasn't, Marysville's not that bad of a prison. It's horrible to be taken from your children, from your family, and be stuck into this prison. But it's not, like, I can't say that I had maybe two people say something to me. And I'm like, hey, until you know the truth, don't say a word to me. Keep your mouth shut. Don't come up to me. Don't say nothing to me. You don't know what you're talking about, you know? And that's just the way I carried myself in there. I you know, I had a mouth and I used it, and I wasn't afraid not to. And I just thought, I'm not coming in here and I'm not going to be a pushover. And I definitely was not.
Well, good for you.
So that part of prison, really, you know, I had a lot of COs that actually read my story and knew my story. And, you know, was just like, couldn't believe that I was in prison, couldn't believe what the justice system did to me, you know? And they were just like, you know, you're going to go home. The truth is going to come out. You're going to go home. You know, you just got to stay strong. And I said, you know, that's all I have is my faith. And, you know, I did Catholic Mass every Thursday, which got me through a day, another day or another week in prison. I stayed busy in programs that kept me, my mind from, you know, being where I was at, knowing that, you know, I was an innocent person sitting in here. And I'm not saying everybody that was in prison was not guilty or guilty. But I knew that I had to carry myself in a way that I was not going to have, and nobody was going to bother me. And that's exactly what I did. I stayed out of the way. I didn't bother too many people. You know, you make friends in there, but you know who to talk to and who not to talk to. And so, you know, that it was hard. I think the hardest part of prison was being away from my family, knowing that I didn't do this and knowing that I couldn't be out there protecting my own children. You know, protecting them from what people were saying to them and what people might have been talking about me and saying to them about me or stuff like that. You know, my kids have told me that, you know, Mom, there's things that happen that we'll never share with you because it's not important. And so I know that people had said things to them, and I know that every time I'd lose an appeal or whatever, I know how heartbreaking it was because they were, you know, we just thought, okay, this is going to be it. This is going to be the appeal that's going to bring me home. And it was another letdown. And it was just letdown after letdown after letdown after letdown. And it was like, okay, finally my mind, I'm like, okay, so what are the courts hiding that they want to keep me in prison? What is it that they don't want to come out?
So I have a question. I have one question before sure. you go on. And it just makes me wonder, since you said that. So did they ever find out who actually did these things to this child?
Nothing was ever done to these children. Nothing. Nothing
was
ever
done to the child.
No, nothing.
So whatever happened to the mother who accused you?
Well, that's a good question, because the mother is out there still doing this. So, you know, each one of them were paid, from what I understand, $1.5 million, because, of course, this mother had a civil attorney before I even went to trial, before I was even arrested. She already had a civil attorney in place. So we already knew what the deal was with her. It was all about money. She was going to make money, and she was going to involve other people, talk them into going along with her. Hey, we're all going to be rich, you know? And I forgot the question. I go on and on and on. So what was that?
No, I just wanted to know whatever happened to her.
Oh,
specifically for falsely accusing you and it coming out that you were falsely convicted. And then I have another follow-up question after that.
Okay, so let me see. I was told, you know, we had a private investigator, and I was told that she tried to do this to two more girls, little girls, right after she did this to me. Which didn't pan out for her. And just last year, a year and a half ago, she did this to her granddaughter, where she said her daughter-in-law molested her granddaughter, went in, got emergency custody of her granddaughter, put this girl and her son, her own son, through hell, just to find out that nothing ever happened to this granddaughter. It was all a lie. And what she was probably trying to do was now she was like, okay, so I'm out of money. So now let me see what kid I can hit up and who I can do this to. So I'll do it to my granddaughter, and then I'll get paid by the county. And they found out that it was all a lie, that she was telling this little girl how to cry, and she was telling her granddaughter what to say and things like that against this woman.
And she wasn't never formally charged for that?
No. And that's my question. Why has this woman never gone to prison? Why is it that she is out there? How did she do three more kids after what she did to me? And nobody's thought to put this woman in prison.
And there's no way for you to try to countersue her or file charges against her.
Well, I mean, I guess I can say this. Yeah, I have filed a civil suit, and I named her in my civil suit. And, you know, and honestly, I don't want no money from her, because she ain't got no money. I don't want money from her. I think she needs to go and do the 15 years that I did. And then when she's done with them 15 years, she needs to do the other 23 that Joseph Allen did. Because you destroyed two people's lives who didn't even know each other. You destroyed our lives, and you need to do that time.
Absolutely.
There's not an amount of money in the world that can that woman could ever, well, she doesn't have any money.
Right.
So just go ahead and do my time. That's how you can do, that's where you need to go to prison. You
right.
need to go to prison at the time that you put innocent people in prison.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the exoneration process. So you said that a judge had acquitted you, but then they like kind of take it back. And I think the misconception about exoneration is folks think once a judge says, oh, we got it wrong, we're going to let you go, that everything is just done and over with. And that is not the case. So you could talk a little bit about what it was like to, you know, come home and then the exoneration process. What's that like?
So like I said, I was home 5 years. The appellate court upheld Judge Burge's decision. So then the prosecutor's office is like, nope, not good enough. We're going to take it to the Supreme Court. They take it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says, okay, so there's definitely something wrong with this case. Definitely. But our problem is that Judge Burge didn't have the right. He overstepped his boundaries or whatever. He didn't have the right to do what he did. Send her back to prison immediately. He pushed back on that. This prosecutor's office said, okay, well, we don't want her to go back to prison. So we're going to try to get you in front of the parole board, Nancy. This is when they were calling me up. So then I went to the parole board. They didn't answer fast enough. And then this is where this agreement came in. So they concocted this agreement, had me sign it or go back to prison. And like I explained to people, it's not that I wanted to sign that. I didn't want to sign that. But I didn't want to go back to prison. I didn't want to leave my kids again. I mean, my kids had been through hell and back. And people need to understand, when they take an innocent person's life and they incarcerate you, knowing that they're falsely incarcerating you, they don't know the effects of the people that they're taking you from. My kids were young. My kids didn't deserve to go through what they went through. And they went through what I went through. And I tell people all the time, my kids did harder time than I did, you know? And so I just, you know, I signed it. And in 2022, we got a new prosecutor in 21. And he said, I'm going to reopen this case. And I'm going to look into it. And his name is J.D. Tomlinson. He's our prosecutor now. He reopened the case. He had five investigators working for him. So his investigators sat down and read everything that they could read about this case. And then they all came back with the same conclusion that nothing ever happened here. It was all, I mean, like, they're like, you can't even, you sit and you read this stuff and you're like, what the hell? I mean, it's so crazy, the stuff that they said and that they accused me of and whatever. And we were able to throw the agreement out. So that opened the doors for me to get a new trial. And then the day that I went to the hearing for the new trial, that is the day that J.D. Tomlinson, Prosecutor Tomlinson, dropped all the charges. So he dropped all the charges against me and also against that Joseph Allen. And he apologized. This man didn't. This man apologized to me, and he apologized to my family and to that Joseph Allen and his family for how bad the justice system did what they did. And that's probably the second person or the third person that's ever apologized for what they did. And it was just, you know, I thought it's over. And it was, it's finally over. But now my fight is, they don't want to compensate me. So the Attorney General's office is fighting me on my compensation. It's been going on for over a year. Finally, it was in the appellate court, which should never have been in the appellate court because it wasn't a criminal case. It's a compensation case. The appellate court decided that they're going to side with the Attorney General's office. And So now it's now we have to take new steps. So now I got to go back to the Supreme Court and try to fight for what you did to me. What you did to me. I didn't do this. You put me in prison. You took my name from me, and you accused me of things that never happened, and you falsely incarcerated me. And now you're telling me that I don't deserve to have any money that I've lost for the last 20 years. Because it was 20 years before I even started working again, you know, 5 years before I felt comfortable enough to go back out into the community and do something that I was felt like I was going to be safe with. And that's when I became a dog groomer. But how are you going to say that I don't have a right to have money? I don't have a right to have anything. You guys are the ones that did this to me. What do you mean I don't have? I have every right in the world to be compensated for what you did. I lost 15 years of 20 years of working. I live on a very small amount of Social Security because I finally had to retire after 9 years of grooming because I couldn't. I had to have a knee replacement, and I just, you know, I couldn't do it anymore. It was just getting physically, it was just too much. And this is the hand that I'm dealing with now, you know? So, I mean, it's sad that nobody, that these people, this justice system puts people in prison wrongfully and does not want to admit or take responsibility for what they have done. And they need to take responsibility for what they've done.
Well, I just want to say I commend your vulnerability and your strength and your resilience throughout this whole process, because I don't know that I would have handled it as well as you did. And I just want to say that I see you and I hear you, and my heart is with you and your family. Well, if there was one thing that you could say to someone who might be in a position to where they're fighting for their innocence that they know is without a doubt their innocence, and they feel like giving up, what would you tell them?
You can't. You can never lose faith. You can never lose hope. You know, I never, you know, there was a time when I thought I'm never going to go home. I'm doing 30 to 90 years. I'm never going to go home. But I never gave up my faith. As you know, when I was in prison, I think my faith became stronger because I knew that, you know, this was man's time. This was not God's time. And that's what people need to understand. They put that number on me. That's not the number that God put on me. And there were times when I thought, he's not with me. You know, where are you? You're not with me. Why are you letting me go through this? But I also knew that there's always a reason why God lets us go through pain that we go through sometimes. But I always, when I came home, they asked me to paint a picture of, you know, how I did my time in prison. And if anybody knows that famous picture of Michelangelo where the fingertip of Adam and God, so I painted the hands of Adam and God. And I even got it tattooed. But and I said, you know, I never realized that God was just a fingertip away. And that's what people need to know. He's just a fingertip away. And he's going to make it right. You just got to hang in there. You got to be strong. You got to just have that faith and that hope and know that he's not going to let you down. He never leaves us, nor does he forsake us.
I know that.
And
right.
That is one of the things that got me through prison was my faith.
That's beautiful. Well, our time is almost up, Nancy. I just want to say thank you so much. You've given me so much to work with. And I'm just thankful that you were open with me and allowed me into your space. So thank you. That was Nancy Smith, and I'm Mary Evans. Support for Reentry Stories comes from the Montgomery County Office of Reentry and the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO.